Tuesday, the 12th of July, and this is Game On. Coming up today, we look back on another Irish rugby win in New Zealand, this time against the Maori All Blacks.
I'm with Craig Casey. Craig, congratulations. I mean, you've been waiting a long time since that game in Hamilton to get a chance again.
Yeah, exactly. We're all raring to go after Hamilton. Took a lot of learnings, like I said, out there. I mean, 13 days, we had a lot of learning to do. Good chats with coaches, good chats with ourselves, good chats with the test team, and then building the test team up for the first two games. So it was great to have Earlsey as captain. I mean, there's no better man to captain his country, and to get him to win tonight, it was absolutely unbelievable. So, class.
In golf, we'll check in on the build-up to the Open at St Andrews as the big guns have their say on the big issues.
The players who have chosen to go to live and play there, I disagree with it. I think that what they've done is that they've turned their back on what has allowed them to get to this position. You know, who knows what's going to happen in the near future. The world ranking points, the criteria for entering major championships. The governing body's going to have to figure that out.
Plus, we'll look ahead to another big Champions League night for Shamrock Rovers, and we've Mark Langdon on a big money Irish move and England's expectations at the Euros after last night's win. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
What a difference a week makes, Ruby. Ireland rugby. Back.
Most certainly does, Murray. And do you know what I found the most interesting part was of it? In both games, just when it looked like the All Blacks on Saturday and the Maori All Blacks today were starting to come back, Ireland just seemed to up it again. They weren't wilting under, or they weren't letting the opposition overpower them.
I wonder, was that a lot to do with travel though? Like when you get off a plane and you've travelled for a long time and you're trying to just re-climatise to whatever time zone you're in. Can't imagine how easy it would be to go out and play against the All Blacks after going so far in a plane and just getting used to everything.
No, I even meant more in history, in years gone by. Irish teams of yesteryear, as much as the improvement in a fortnight, I just thought the belief in this group of players was there that when the All Blacks started to come, they didn't fold. I thought that was brilliant to watch.
Andy Farrell's been quite interesting in his post-match and pre-match and all his media, and he keeps talking about it being a happy camp, and even if they lost, they'd still be happy because they would have learned something. And I actually think he's been honest that they are fairly happy.
Yeah, that's probably individuals too and different mindsets. I can't imagine he looks across the dinner table at Paul O'Connell and he's in a happy place after Ireland lose. Maybe he's changed completely in his life. But yeah, and I'm not so sure Johnny looks overly happy when he loses. But maybe he hasn't been able to move that mindset to get them over the disappointment quicker and into what do we do wrong, how do we change it, and how do we fix it, rather than, I suppose, feeling sorry for yourself for too long. Maybe he's able to get them on the front foot quicker.
I just thought maybe he's sending a message saying, like, as you said, don't be feeling sorry for yourselves now, or, you know, I don't want to see anybody sulking. We just have to get on with it and try and fix things and make it better. I'd also like to make a case for there being high level, top level elite sport on at 8 o'clock every morning.
Yeah, I back you up on that one. Most definitely. I think there's definitely a place for that in everyone's life. I did must say it was, giving the kids breakfast this morning, watching rugby was better than what's usually on.
It's a great way to start the day. Well, Michael Corcoran is in New Zealand and he was chatting to Andy Farrell after that win today. And unsurprisingly, Andy Farrell is in great spirits.
Andy, congratulations. That was a terrific performance. Very difficult conditions. You must be delighted with the win.
It was horrendous conditions. And you never see what it's like on TV, but obviously this is a cricket ground and a ball, and the wind was horrendous. I mean, it's tipped down all day, as you know, Corky, so the weather's been horrendous. But when you've got a young pack, and, you know, we needed to fix a few things in the scrum there from the last game that these guys played, and the game management from halfbacks in these type of conditions where it's never going to be perfect, I thought it was an excellent victory for them.
And a much better performance all round from that opening game in Hamilton.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, they learned a lot. And like we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, sometimes desperation can get in your way. And we was too desperate, you know, trying to go on our own way. So therefore, discipline, not just with the referee, but how we want to play the game was pretty poor in that first game. But it's all about the second game, isn't it? It's all about how you learn and improve, and they certainly did that.
There was a huge degree of composure throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, again, we're playing against an experienced side, and these lads, it's the second time that they've played together as a group, and, you know, I think that's for all's his, you know, third game as a fly half. So I thought some of these lads have grown massively, and like I keep on saying, if we get four or five gems from this, these lads will obviously have a holiday and they'll rip into pre-season with an ambition in mind to make the squad, you know, for the autumn series. So that's only going to be good for us going forward.
Now, you had to learn to deal with, I won't call it adversity, but I mean there was a yellow card. It was 15 against 14 for a while. The Maori All Blacks came back against you, but you responded quite well.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about yellow cards and red cards and, you know, who should win and who shouldn't win. Each game takes its own course, whether you've got a card or not. You know, we've been involved in games where we've had a card and lost, or we've had a card and won, you know. So we managed that pretty well and never panicked. And I suppose that's the main lesson for these boys, that, you know, they was able to get themselves back down to neutral the whole time when things weren't perfect, and that's a great lesson for us.
Winning is becoming a bit of a habit now, right now, and that's really important in the context of what's coming at the end of this week.
Oh, well, it's fantastic for the group, but more importantly, it's fantastic for those players that's put the Irish shirt on for the first time, and I hope that's whetted their appetite to grow the group for the future.
It's probably just as well you didn't lose Michael Bent's number.
Oh, wow. I mean, what a story, eh? I mean, he first played his first game coming off the plane and being brought straight into the Irish side against South Africa, and he's played his last game here for Ireland, and he only arrived, he missed his flight last night, he only arrived this morning, you know, so what a story.
An exciting few days ahead, Andy.
Well, it doesn't get any better, you know, this is what it's all about, and, you know, we've got a fit squad, which is great. We've got a day off tomorrow together, and we turn up for work on Thursday, Friday and Saturday, you know, with three more days to go to make a bit of history.
Andy Farrell there speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier on. Shane Byrne is with us now on the line. Shane, he is right. It is an exciting few days, and that game on Saturday is one that I think everyone is really looking forward to, because we're now in a situation where I don't think anybody thought we would be, where we could win the series.
Yeah, history made, but more to come, hopefully. It would be absolutely outrageous thing to do if we managed to win a test series down there. It's taken us so long to get that win on New Zealand soil, and with so many efforts and so many close calls over the years, but it really has added an amazing buzz to the week. And this game today against the Maori All Blacks, I think, was superb and a real way of building the pressure a little bit on New Zealand as well, that, you know, the whole camp is obviously buzzing within Ireland, and the guys are only going to go in with the heads held high for that game on Saturday.
Could you see that in the lads today, Shane? Obviously, the first team winning on Saturday, these being the understudies, or some of them maybe on the other way out, that inspired them to up it again, and can they inspire the first team to go even further?
There's no doubt, because, you know, to answer your first question, did we see it? I don't think a lot of people did see a performance like that in this team. Let's be straight, in the way that Andy was talking about there, about the guys now are on holiday and stuff like that. Like this, for that group of players, on the whole, it wasn't about challenging for test starts or anything like that. It was just about seeing which of them are ready to make the step up if they're needed to come in for that Ireland team for the season coming. And you know, so many guys did in that game. It was superb. Like, we know Earls, McCluskey, you know, they all, Larmer, they've done it. There's no problem. But Kieran Frawley really stepped up. I thought he had an absolutely superb game. The front row held their own, were great. And the whole back row, especially Gavin Coombs, I thought was absolutely excellent. Treadwell as well. So many names of guys, and it's hard even to leave anyone out of that, names that you will go, they really stood up today. They had a much harder, more physical game plan to execute, and they did it brilliantly. And there was so much pressure on them to make it go right, and it did.
Shane, when it comes to Irish rugby, people get obsessed with different aspects of it, whether it's the evolution of the game plan under Andy Farrell, the physicality of the game, and whether Ireland are up to it or not. But the latest obsession seems to be depth. Are any of those questions answered after today when it comes to depth?
Well, yeah, after today, you would have to say so. Now, it certainly wasn't 2 weeks ago. It wasn't like that. You know, it was a worrying stat. So these things ebbs and flow. But, like, what will have happened today is that those guys will have gained valuable experience from that. And that is something that will be embedded in their rugby DNA, that they know how to play at that very, very high level and the pressure that's needed. You'd be very, very sure that Andy Farrell had the pressure well wrapped up on them. He says that the camp is in superb form and everything like that, but the pressure is still there. Those guys knew they had to perform rather than slipping down the ladder again, like, because there's always someone else nipping at your heel. But look, if that's the performances that we get out of our so-called A team, well, look, we're en route at the moment. That there was very few guys you would be concerned that wouldn't step up if needed.
When you look at it, Shane, and the preparation for what's coming, you've been on tours all around the world, a day off tomorrow and then back to work Thursday and Friday. How much work are they going to do Thursday and Friday? It's the end of a long season. Is it just all video analysis, or are they actually going to work?
Yeah, the way the game plan and everything will be set, and they will know exactly what they need to do. It'll be just bedding it in on Thursday. Captain's run-ish kind of thing, and very no contact, very definitely just repeating what they need to do in certain situations, and so that everybody is very, very familiar with it. And the only video work that is done normally from the Thursday on is the player's individual, just going in and just going through the bits and pieces he needs to see, you know, the guy calling the line outs just to check the opposition defence, wing forwards trying to check where they have to be in space, cover and defence, centres likewise. And it's just personal preparation from Thursday on in. It's getting your headset completely right, because, you know, you, as I said before, you could be, have the most superb physique and rugby ability, but if the top 2 inches aren't correct, you can forget about it. And that was the difference in the last two games with the guys in the Irish jerseys. That was the difference. They were absolutely focused single-mindedly on what they needed to do, and the game today, this morning, was all about that, because the game didn't start the way they would have liked it to, but they just took their opportunity and you know, they just moved on from there. It was superb to see.
Are there any selection dilemmas now facing Andy Farrell?
Oh, I don't think so. I think we got good injury news, didn't we, today? You know,
Peter O'Mahony.
Peter O'Mahony is good to go. Sexton declared himself fit immediately.
Surprise.
He was just ignoring everybody, as he normally does. And no, I can't see any changes in it. I think that everything is exactly set. You've got to reward everybody who was involved in a performance like that last weekend. You can't hatchet anybody. And even, you know, that to me is just something that is natural. Like, it was when Earls was replaced from the first test, that was just, it was injuries coming back, you know, and that was just horses for courses. But this team did an amazing thing last week, and they need to be given the opportunity to do the same again, because it really is there. The ironic thing about New Zealand being the number one side in the world for so long is that, probably more than any side, they don't have a plan B, because their plan A is so good. But if you make them, you know, not allowed to settle, that they have to think on their feet, they can't do it. They really find it very, very hard. And that's going to be key to Ireland's game plan. Again, come out, start superbly fast, get into the game really quick, but do not let New Zealand settle. And you never know what could happen.
Obviously, the referee played a key part last Saturday.
Yeah.
The referee was involved again this morning. Sean Stevenson got a yellow. So did Jordan Lammer. So did Keane Prendergast. The New Zealand media will be all over Wayne Barnes. Is he? I'm sure he is, but he has to keep his mind out of that, because he's going to be key to whatever chance Ireland have.
Yeah, it was very important last week that New Zealand, and they're brilliant at it, you have to doff the cap to them, they normally get away with the little things, and it creates a little bit of chaos and gives them a massive amount of advantage. And they didn't get away with it last week. The reffing team were superb. And again, it went against Ireland later on in the game. As you say, there were cards going as well. But if that's in all been fair, that suits Ireland, because it is normally an advantage that New Zealand have. So I'd be very happy. I would be concerned whether Barnes would do that against a home team. Unfortunately, he has a bit of a reputation of being the home ref. And if it continues the way it was, where it creates a situation where all things equal, we'll take that. Absolutely.
What did you think this morning watching Jordan Larmour getting done for the early tackle and Ireland not getting the penalty try at the weekend? Is that just a difference in referees, or was the pass crucial?
Well, see, the pass, you see, Johnny Sexton was dead right. Johnny Sexton looked and he saw that the tackle was about to be made, so he held the ball. So Johnny Sexton actually did really well not to pass the ball. So it was, you know, to me, that was a penalty try, no doubt about it. But it was ironic that the game swung on two moments involving Larmour, both positive and negative. I think that that Earls was as awake to give Larmour his first try. It was a great swing moment. And the fact that when Larmour got sent off, that the teams, the scoreboard never moved while he was in the bin, I think was a great, great statement by this team. So, yeah, look, as far as the reffing goes, they seem to be really knuckling down on the small little things as well, rather than just the big things. And long may that continue. I don't have a problem with that, particularly down in New Zealand.
So Shane, give us a prediction for Saturday morning.
Abbotsford, listen, I'm not going to go against Ireland, am I? Like, listen, we've made history. Let's go for more. It would be absolutely superb. And, like, you know, dare we talk about it. This is the route that England took to the World Cup in 03, that we could actually start getting that hoodoo off our backs of a quarter final. You know, the team went down New Zealand and won down there, and that's, they're big steps to take, and this squad of players are absolutely superb.
So you never get to a semi final, like, never want to win a World Cup. Go on,
piling the hype on now. Why not? The pressure. Shane Byrne, thanks so much for joining us, and I'd say it'll be a cracker for sure. We're all looking forward to it anyway, and it will be live on 2FM on Saturday morning, so do tune into it. It's time for a very quick break now, and then we're starting our build up to this weekend's Open.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crow, alongside Ruby Walsh. It is 23 minutes past six, and we're going to get stuck into golf. Ruby, before we start looking at the 150th Open at St Andrews, I have to ask you about your experience at the JP McManus Pro-Am.
Oh, it was incredible, Marie, to play with Cormac Sharvin on Tuesday morning and then with Jordan Spieth on, or Cormac on Monday and Jordan on Tuesday was incredible. What did I call him?
Yeah, Jordan. But it's like your best pals.
I was hardly walking down the fairway saying, excuse me, Mr. Speed. But it was incredible. I mean, Adair is a fantastic place, but the crowds, the atmosphere, the caliber of golfer that was there, and to be a tiny, tiny part of it was incredible. And not to make a complete fool of myself was probably better. I did a good job at times, but I didn't make a complete fool of myself.
I did see at one stage a video of you and you were teeing off. I think it might have been the second day, and you were so delighted with yourself for actually hitting it straight.
Hitting the fairway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you fist pumps. When there's a couple of thousand people standing around and they're majority of you're walking.
But you could have played it cool, Ruby.
I'm probably thinking he's going to hit it in the drain to bang it out there. It was good fun, and the team ended up finishing third, and I contributed a little bit, so it was a great thing all in all.
I didn't know you finished third. Very good. I think I told you before, my dad played in it the last time round.
Yeah,
he qualified for it, so he was with Ernie Els and Fred Funk, and he said that like you did, there are so many people watching you, and you're up beside these people who are the top of their game, and you're trying to look like you can at least hit a ball, which isn't that easy when you have all this pressure on you and it's not your natural habitat.
Well, a golf ball is small, and it gets incredibly small. There's a lot of people looking at you. It becomes like a dot on the top of the tee. But it is, and then you're also thinking, Marie, like, it's obviously, there's a lot of people there, and it's rope for professionals, and you're a bog standard amateur, so you're thinking, oh, please don't hit someone as well. You're looking down the fairways and there's people everywhere, like, and I end up getting a birdie at one stage, and I was roaring four off the tee box, but it hit a bank and came back in. But look, it was great fun, and it was an incredible fundraiser and an incredibly well run event. I must say, watching some of it on television, it looked amazing, and I can't wait for the Ryder Cup there. It'll, like, talk about showcasing Ireland. It did.
It really did. Okay, so enough about the stuff that we all saw. What was it like afterwards? What was the crack like?
Well, that was great. But look, at the end of the day, Marie, something like Roy Keane, at the end of the day, golfers are normal people. And, you know, whilst I wasn't hanging around with the American guys, like, you know, you're there with Cormac Sharvin and Shane Lowry, and they're just normal people. And it was great fun, and we had plenty of slagging, and we had great crack. And the more you talk to them, the more you realise that a lot of them have the same issues as every other sports person has. You're talking to Cormac Sharvin and Paul Dunne, and, you know, mentally they're thinking about the game, and then you have Shane Lowry trying to help them, and it is just, they're an incredible bunch of people who probably are pretty much like a travelling circus when you listen to their lives and all they have and all they achieve. But they're great people, and I was delighted to be amongst them for a couple of days.
Okay, so Ruby, you're obviously brilliant at what you did on the horse. You're pretty good at the television radio as well. You're not great at the golf though. Like, no. Is it hard for you, who's pretty much good at everything that you try, or at least you can push yourself and keep practicing and keep improving yourself and you get to the top of your game, to not be good at something?
No, I'm a realist as well, and I realised a long time ago I would only ever be average at golf, so I play golf for fun. And okay, that's the way I've kept golf. I have no intention. I'm not like my good friend AP or Mick Fitzgerald, who thinks at some stage you could get himself down to be a scratch golfer. I know I'm an 18 handicapper. I'm quite happy to be playing off 18, and I will stay on 18 as long as I can.
Well, look, you can't be good at everything, Ruby.
Unfortunately not, Marie. But look, it was, I just thought their manner looked outstanding, and it was an incredible event. So thank you very much, JP and Noreen.
Oh well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Right, well, let's turn our attention to the Open, 150th Open, St Andrews, starting actually tomorrow. I don't even know what date it is. Tomorrow? Thursday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Today's
Sunday.
Tuesday, so yes, glad we've clarified that. Well, Galway golfer Ronal Mullarney is one of those teeing off at St Andrews, and he had to qualify to earn his place. He spoke to Greg Allen. Let's hear it.
Ronal Mullarney, you must absolutely, you know, be thinking that this is, you know, it's a huge opportunity, and it's kind of candy shop type of scenario. You know, it's a week that you'll never forget, no matter what happens. Where are you with your preparations in your head, and what's ahead of you this week?
Yeah, good. I'm lucky enough, Wednesday to Friday of last week, I was down in Dunbeg in Clare practicing, so I couldn't have asked for much better conditions down there to be practicing, and they couldn't have done enough for me. And Bryson DeChambeau was down there as well, so I spent a lot of time with him, so the last couple of days have been brilliant. And then obviously coming over here, a few practice rounds, yeah, brilliant.
So what did you pick out of Bryson DeChambeau's game and his head, for that matter? We know it's a complicated head.
Well, Greg, if I was to go into that now, this would be a really long interview. There was lots and lots talked about, but he couldn't be nicer. That he was so open with the information, I was amazed, because at the start I was wondering, like, he might tell me, you know, get lost, he wants to go and practice, but he got his work done, and after that he couldn't give me enough time. It was brilliant. And then, actually, funny enough, on Friday evening, he goes, how are you getting over here? And I said, oh, I'm flying from Dublin. He goes, well, we're flying from Shannon if you want to come with me. Yes, please. So he brought me on the jet over.
So you went over here with Bryson DeChambeau. He obviously took a liking to you.
Happy days, yeah. I don't know. I suppose a little bit of a connection. Dad's a golf machine instructor, and that's how Bryson would have grown up. His original coach, Mike Shy, would have been a golf machine instructor. So there was a lot of kind of technical talk, I suppose. But yeah, it's brilliant, brilliant.
So your dad owns a driving range. Your dad is a golf machine instructor.
Yeah.
So, and obviously Bryson goes by the golf machine sort of plan. Explain what that is, the golf machine.
Good question. There's no simple answer to that. The golf machine is, like, as Bryson would call it, it's like a recipe book. So, like, you could swing a club millions of different ways, and it has a lot of them covered. So you can just pick and choose how you want to construct your golf swing. And it's basically a book on physics and geometry, so it's kind of a deep dive into golf.
And you go down that route, that very technical scientific route that he loves?
Yeah, not many people know about that, but yeah, that would be me, yeah. The people who do know me would know that's the way I go about things, yeah. But obviously Bryson's a much bigger stage than I am, but Bryson would be very vocal about it. I don't kind of talk much about it, but he would know a lot more clearly than I would. But it's great to talk to him about some of the things he's figured out. Incredible.
Like?
No. Okay, come on now. I could get shot if I said it. But very interesting character. Very interesting, very helpful.
And different to what we would expect? Because the public persona doesn't always portray that?
Yeah, he is... I haven't met too many people in the public eye, especially some as kind of, I suppose, big as him, but I've never met someone who's as, I suppose, giving with their time. It's a lot of time pressure, everything he does, but he couldn't give me enough time, couldn't help me enough, couldn't spend enough. It's brilliant.
You're really lighting the specifics here, but it's fair to say the small talk was over quickly and you got into the heavy stuff.
I knew about a couple of days before I went down there, when I was organising going down to Dunbeg, I was told he was going to be there, so I got writing the questions, and every one of them, went through each one of them. He was like, do you have a question? I was like, yeah. He goes, right, go. Cut through them all. So, couldn't be better.
So that really is a nice insight into someone who doesn't always come across as being as, I suppose, human and giving as he is.
I cannot stress, Greg, how good he was to me. I can't.
Good. So how's it... obviously, it's helped you get your head into this week, because you're going to be rubbing shoulder with stars this week, and you've obviously been with one, and clearly this is a week to pinch yourself to some degree, but also with business to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that, I think that was the perfect preparation, because... He's one of the biggest stars in golf, so familiarising yourself with people like that was brilliant. But also, like, the condition down in Dunbeg was incredible. I completely had the run of the place. Whatever we wanted to do, hit balls, each side of the range, chipping green. They shut one of the holes for us practicing there. They couldn't have done more for us. And I've played St Andrews a whole lot of times. So, yeah, just like what you're saying, all that stuff was great. It's brilliant. It's great insight. Learned lots, but there's business to be done.
Yeah. Now, look, your amateur career actually took you here, and you won the Oranje Scholars around here?
Yeah, I won the Oranje Scholars.
So you're a winner in St Andrews?
I'm a winner in St Andrews, yes. I think Brian Kill put a nice tweet up about me. I didn't see it now, someone told me. But, yeah, correct, winner in St Andrews. I remember well, it wasn't weather like this, complete opposite, funny enough. But, yeah, I know the place well.
So, with that knowledge, that was 3-4 years ago?
That's a good question. 2018.
2018, I think, yeah. So that was a few years ago, but obviously when you were still an amateur, does it make you feel that coming back to somewhere that you've actually played well in and won, that, like, it's the golf course, it's an opposition, and it's doable as a task this week?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of, the way I am anyway, I kind of get lost a little bit in the shot anyway, so, you know, whether there's thousands or hundreds or no one watching me, it's kind of irrelevant when I get over the ball. But any sort of familiarity, I suppose, is going to help, because it's easy me saying when I'm over the ball, but there's lots of stuff that goes on in between shots, off the course and things like that, that kind of, they're very different to what I'd be used to.
And do you have a hope or a plan for the week? Do you have sort of a target, a goal that's more than a hope?
Not particularly. I was talking to someone there recently about that. I could say I want to make the cut, I want to come top 10, I want to win any of that stuff. It's only words. So I'm going to set out my plan, stick to my plan, see where it leads me.
So that was Ronan Mullarney speaking to Greg Allen a little bit earlier on about playing at the 150th Open at St Andrews. And Ruby, listening to him talking there about Bryson DeChambeau actually reminds me of when people ask me about you, what you're really like, and if you're nice. I get that all the time. And then they get really surprised when I say he's pretty much like what Ronan said there about Bryson, how giving you are with your time and how nice you are, and there you go.
It's all the exterior or the facade.
Yeah, you're actually really nice.
Thanks.
Anyway, let's
not
move
to
on.
Bad yourself. No, people always ask me about you.
They do, yeah. Well, let's talk about the Open. Raimi Burns joins us from St Andrews. Well, how are things over there?
It's a beautiful day here, Marie, in St Andrews. It's bright blue skies. The egg is out in the sky.
Oh,
it's a little windy, but a phenomenal atmosphere, huge crowds for a Tuesday, and a lot of golfers out practicing and trying to get used to this tremendous links. It's been very natural. It's the fairways are probably harder than the greens, and there's a lot of greens out here. There's big greens, and it's very, very, very difficult approach shots, and it's very difficult to close the flag, but... the R&A have done a fantastic job to set up the whole place. The ambulance, everything is just phenomenal. It's the place to be this week. It's the 150th Open, and it's just phenomenal, the whole infrastructure and what is what way the golf course is presented is just phenomenal.
Is it really hot over there?
It's actually roasting. It's about 22 degrees right now. I'm standing outside here in St Andrews itself, and it's everyone's gone round, and you know, it's like being in Marbella. That's what it's like. It's absolutely stunning. A little bit of a breeze, as I said, all day. It's probably going to be the breeziest that it's been, that it'll be all week. But it's a stiff breeze on the golf course, especially when you get out around the back end of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and 11. But it's just fabulous. Fabulous day for the punter, fabulous day for everyone.
Well, Remy, wind is key to how St Andrews is going to play, like any golf course. I mean, it's a par 72, 14 par 4s, only 2 par 3s, 2 par 5s. But there's plenty of drivable par 4s in there and a rock hard fairways. Is that going to entice the three players to take more on?
It's going to be depend a lot, Ruby, on the wind. Like I saw, I went out to watch Scheffler play this morning, and like he ripped a long iron off the first, and you know, the pin was back middle. You know, you have to hold your ball flight. That's what the first 9 holes I sort of seen that. You have to. I followed Louis as well, and if he can, and Matt Fitzpatrick, and if you can hold your ball flight. But saying that, you can hit it up the left side all day, but you're very difficult shots the first 5, 6, 7 holes. If you can sort of get it into the right side of these fairways, it gives it's more accessible pin. So it's very strategic. It's a very, very well-designed golf course. It's so natural. And the bunkers are raked against you as well. It's going to be very difficult for fairway bunkers here because the sand is sort of against you. So you're not going to be able to clip it like you would in a Dunhill, etc. And then, obviously, you're onto the par fours. You have 9, you have 10. But the guys were laying up on. And even the par 3, I think the 8th hole, they couldn't hold the green. I watched Cameron Young, Rory McIlroy, and the ball was effectively going 30 yards over the back of the green. And the greens are, it's going to be very, very difficult to get close to the hole. I know people are saying, oh, it'll be under par, the golf course will be, you know, it'll be annihilated and stuff. But I can't see that personally. The wind will play a big factor. The holding the ball, your choice of shot. You know, even I watched Harold Varner play 17. You know, he's only 122 yards in, and it was nearly better than being, you know, hitting the 7-iron in rather than hitting a wedge in because too much spin on the ball. But it's tricky. Fairways are harder than the greens. It's real crusty, and it's the way Lynx Golf was designed to play. It looks phenomenal. It's old style Lynx. That's the only way I can put it. It's down the ball. You have to keep the ball down a certain shots, but holding the golf ball, and then you get back on the back 9 then, and obviously it's a lot of wind off the right-hand side. You've got all the bunkers to contend with. Of course, you can go and take driver out. You can wing it wherever you, as hard as far as you want, but placement in those holes is crucial, you know.
Those greens that you mentioned, them being big greens, and people talk about them quite a lot and the importance of putting, and then you hear the stats that the last 4 winners all had a putting average ranking inside the top 10. And then take into account everything else that you've said about the course. Who's it going to suit then?
Jordan Spieth. Someone who's used to having a tough time all the time on a golf course. Somebody who can be very patient. Somebody who can take criticism of his old game at times. You have to be very, very patient. You have to accept everything. You just don't know what's going to happen, what type of bounce you get. Possibly somebody, you know, like Shane Lowry with a wedge. The wedge game's phenomenal. He drives the ball, holds the ball up really well. Somebody who puts from 5 feet in. Someone who can hold a lot of five-footers. Morikawa did it last year in St. George's, missed the cut here in Scotland. Someone who starts their day off on Thursday and has a, you know, plays tough, hard, his knuckles down, gets in, understands that not everything's going to go right from the start. You're going to have bogeys. Of course, you're going to have 3 putts, but if you can accept those bad things will happen, and hopefully the good things will come. But it's a very open championship, in my opinion. You know, there's a lot of great players here, a lot of young rookies like Cameron Young, who just might come over here and get used to it quickly. There's been a lot of people from America over here playing, practicing in Ireland, practicing, you know, different parts of Scotland, etc. And, you know, but I do think that the experienced golfer who's used to these conditions, it's a huge advantage. And there's not too many people in the field that maybe played here the last time or played here certainly in the early 2000s because, you know, golf, a lot of young golfers around. You know, Justin Thomas has got a lot of experience now in Lynx Golf. He's been a bit disappointed in Open Championships over the last few. Can he win one? Eventually, probably will. Is he two? Does he hit it well enough to win round here? Of course, but does he putt well enough? We don't know. But I would be looking at a top five putter on the stats, and I'd be picking someone from that to win round here. Because, I mean, some of these greens take an hour for the greenkeeper to cut. I mean, they're huge undulations, bunkers guarding them, false fronts, a lot of the greens, and some of them are flat. It's artistry at its finest. It's real pure links artistry built 150 or whatever years ago this champion, this golf course was built, and it's a master class golf course, and it's going to take someone with a huge imagination, like we've seen Seve, Nick Faldo, John Daly through the years winning around here. You know, it's just going to take that type of golfer that can accept failure at certain times and to just jump back up on the tram again and get back on as quick as you can. And I think that's going to be the key here for winning this event.
I was reading through the full list of players who are partaking this week, and I noticed that there was a considerable amount of Asian golfers from Japan, Korea, etc. Are they going to find this very difficult and very, very strange for them? They're all rock solid putters, but is this going to be a completely different ballgame for them?
I mean, some of these players, it'll be like going to a different, be like going to Mars. You know, that's how different this golf course is. Like, this is one of the best golf courses in the world. I know people can go on and say, oh, it's short, we've seen 62s and 63s there over the year, but this is a different challenge, and people are going to struggle. You might get an Australian golfer, you know, someone like Cameron Smith, somewhere around the sort of Sydney area or Melbourne area, played on the plains down there on the white sandy areas, you know, possibly Mark Leishman, you know, even Neiman. I watched Neiman today, won an LA Open, that type of hard terrain, really tough, like, you know, this is, sometimes it can be bamboo in the eyes, Ruby. You know, this is really, really difficult. You can, a three can be turned into a six very, very quickly. Just one bad shot. We've seen it with Padraig, you know, back in 15, in the fourth or fifth hole, losing a golf ball in contention. There's so many variables, and if you can accept those things, but it's going to be difficult for guys from the Far East. I mean, although saying that Matsuyama, the Japanese golfer, he's plenty of experience playing in these terrains over the years, but I think experience is a key. You play a lot of this golf. The more of this golf you've played in your life, you certainly have. It's certainly a bigger advantage.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be absolutely great fun. Remy Burns, thanks so many for taking our call.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is that time of the year when transfers start to take centre stage and everybody speculates and anticipates who is going to be moving where and when. Well, we do have something official on Nathan Collins. So he has completed a move from Burnley to Wolves for an undisclosed fee, which is believed to be in the region of £20.5 million, which would make him the most expensive Irish transfer of all time. Mark Langdon joins us on the line to talk us through all of the transfer news. And we're also joined by David Wilson of RTE Sport. Mark, it looks like that move for Nathan Collins has been completed. Is this the right move for him at the right time, do you think?
I think he definitely, you know, deserved to be playing Premier League football after the way that particularly finished the season with Burnley. Thought he was a real standout player as that season went on. I think, you know, at the start of last season, you would have maybe not anticipated, becoming the most expensive, you know, Irish player of all time. But I do believe his performances deserve that. I think Wolves is a good sort of next step as well, and it's probably a good place for a defender to go, because Bruno Lage is somebody that likes to defend first and keep clean sheets. And I always think if you are a defender, that is a much more, I think, sort of nicer place to go, rather than maybe, you know, you can maybe go too high up the ladder. And if you look at sort of the big six in the Premier League, for instance, all of them teams really want to defend on the halfway line, and you can look really exposed playing that way, because, you know, there's a lot of aggression in just trying to squeeze the play. Somebody like Harry Maguire has maybe found that to his cost, you know, playing for Manchester United. So I think it's a good next step. I think he'll play every week. You know, Wolves are not going to spend that kind of money on somebody that's not going to play. I think that Wolves are a team maybe that might struggle next season, but no reason really why Collins shouldn't be an integral part of whatever Wolves do. And I do think it's a good signing, and not an outrageous transfer fee given his performances in the second half of the season particularly.
Not outrageous yet. I look at it and think, well, Robbie Keane, 19 million from Spurs to Liverpool, 17 million Damien Duff from Blackburn to Chelsea, yet it's still 20.5. The inflation in prices is incredible over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at sort of some of the players that are moving around, you know, this summer, even in the defensive kind of, you know, areas, Nico Williams, you know, from Liverpool to Forest being one. There's talk of Spence moving from Middlesbrough to Tottenham for sort of a fee that's not that dissimilar. And here you've got somebody that has proven they can play in the Premier League and probably got the potential to, you know, go on and improve further. So, it's a lot of money for a team like Wolves. You know, they're not a club that goes out, particularly if they're non-Portuguese. They seem addicted to the Portuguese market, but they're not a team that sort of happily throws around 20 million on defenders. Usually, if you look at kind of, you know, what they've got at the back with Kilman and Cody, players that have come through the ranks or been picked up really cheaply. So I think that they've identified, you know, a talent there that can go in, is capable of playing if they want to play back three or back four. And I think it's one of those good moves all round, because, you know, Burnley will think that 20 million is a decent amount for them to potentially reinvest as well in their Championship squad. So one of those rare football transfers where maybe everybody's a winner.
What about Josh Cullen, David? So it has been confirmed that he has moved to Burnley from Anderlecht. So he's linking up there with Vincent Kompany, and the fee is believed to be around 3 million. And we're looking at 20 million for Nathan Collins. 3 million seems okay for Josh Cullen.
Yeah, that's I think it's a good sign for Burnley. You know, he had just 1 year left in his contract with Anderlecht. He worked with Vincent Kompany in Belgium. I think he played like 55 games last year. He didn't miss a minute for Anderlecht in the league. Obviously a player that Kompany rates very highly. He's gone back to England, I suppose, back to a league he's been on loan in before. He's also joined up with Luke McNally, who's moved there from Oxford United, and kind of keeps the Irish contingent at Burnley. But it's a good signing. He'll need to play though, and you know, he'll probably improve that squad, because they've actually, you know, lost a lot of players in this transfer window.
While we're on the subject of Ireland players, David, it seems that Aaron Connolly could be on the move as well, and he's linked with a move to Italy.
Yeah, Aaron Connolly linked with a move to Venezia, relegated from Serie A to Serie B last season. Have really nice jerseys, actually. But it could be a good move for him. You know, the move for Josh Cullen abroad was good for him, and he's got to move back into Burnley. So maybe Aaron Connolly could do something similar. Ethan Ampadu, who plays for Wales and was on loan at Venezia last season, he destroyed Ireland in a Nations League game a couple of years ago. But maybe Aaron Connolly could go and reignite his career and hopefully get back into an Ireland squad from his point of view soon by joining a litany of Irish players that have gone to Italy.
Wouldn't be a bad holiday idea, actually, to head to Italy now and go and watch all the Ireland players.
Yeah, exactly. You've got James Abanko and Festi Abicelli, and you know, even Liam Carrigan's gone from UCD to Como.
Kevin Zeffi,
yeah. So it could
be a great time going to matches in Italy, checking them all out. Sorry, Ruby.
You couldn't just go to Italy on holidays anyway, no? You have to go and watch soccer. Like, maybe not go to work when you go on holidays, Marie. That's the idea of a holiday. Mark, there's big names on the move as well. Paul Pogba's found his way to Juventus. Raheem Sterling might be going to Chelsea. Robert Lewandowski is leaving Bayern Munich. Frankie de Jong going to Manchester United. Are they all in the offing, or have we any confirmations?
Pogba will be playing for Juventus next season. I felt a really big disappointment at Manchester United.
I agree with you.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that, you know, were making all kinds of excuses for why he wasn't playing well. But, you know, ultimately, as the individual and as somebody that as good as he is, then I think he should have been able to have been more dominating, really, in that Manchester United team, rather than just, you know, once a month or once every 6 weeks. You know, he'd really turn it on. So going back to a club that where he's loved, and maybe he can find his best form. But I think that Manchester United had to cut their ties in terms of sort of replacing him with Frankie de Jong. I mean, it's complicated in as much as Barcelona owe the Dutchman a lot of money from deferred wages, and I think he quite rightly wants that money, you know, before he makes any move to Manchester. I think the two clubs would, you know, quite happily deal at the fees that have been mentioned. But like I say, I mean, he's perfectly within his rights to wait for a substantial amount of money before he leaves. I don't think it would be right for him to write off, you know, reportedly sort of over £10 million. So I mean, I think he definitely is going to sit that one out. Lewandowski, I mean, again, Bayern Munich would sell Lewandowski if Barcelona can get up to the 50-55 million euros sort of transfer fee that they want. I mean, it is an extraordinary amount of money to pay for somebody of Lewandowski's age. I know he's been fantastic, you know, in the Bundesliga for Bayern Munich, and scores goals regularly for Poland, but there aren't many sort of 33-year-olds, he's 34 in August, that would go for that kind of money. But Barcelona feel like they're prepared to pay that one if they can raise funds elsewhere. They're just having a few problems registering players. We've spoken about their issues with sort of financial fair play over the last year or so. So they've got a lot of signings, Christensen, Kessie from Milan. They also want Rafinha from Leeds United as well. So they're just sort of having to get their sort of books in order before they're able to complete all those signings. But Lewandowski has really put himself out for Barcelona. He's basically cut his ties with Bayern Munich, told them he doesn't want to play for them again, been very aggressive in wanting the move to Barcelona. So he, more than anyone, will be hoping that Barca can raise the funds. It seems like that they will be able to do that one. He's a great player. It's just a lot of money to spend on somebody of his age.
And Mark, before we finish up, it's 18:54 and Ruby hasn't mentioned the fact that Man United beat Liverpool 4-0 today.
Yeah, I looked at when I saw the teams just before kickoff. It did look like it was one where Manchester United could get a sort of morale boosting win. I think I would take that with a pinch of salt, that result. United have been in pre-season a little bit longer than Liverpool, which I think does count. And like I say, the team that Ten Hag picked was pretty strong. Wouldn't be that far off sort of being first choice, really, for United. There were a lot of players there that will expect to start. For Liverpool, it was very much a mix and match and sort of very early pre-season game. So a morale-boosting win for Manchester United, but not something that I think will hold out for the rest of the season. I certainly, from a Liverpool fan, I wouldn't be panicking, and if I was a United fan, I wouldn't be getting too excited by the result.
I agree, Mark. It's like looking at the league and the GAA and thinking it's going to have a relevance to the championship. What happens in pre-season in soccer is even nearly as bad as that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just have to, you know, teams are at very different levels of fitness as much as anything else. You know, some teams, like I say, Ten Hag had United back, you know, pretty early, even by Premier League standards.
I wouldn't have let them off the way they played last year.
Well, you could argue they've had about 2 years off anyway, so, you know, there's maybe a little bit of that. And they will want to impress a new manager. I mean, if Ten Hag can't get an immediate response from them, at least early on, then that would not bode well for the future. So I think it is to be expected that he can kind of lift the team, at least in the short term. Long term, a lot more will have to go right for United in the transfer market. But just having a new voice and a new direction can't be a bad thing at this time. I wouldn't have thought.
Okay, well, thank you so much for those updates, Mark. David, the Champions League game between Hibernians and Shamrock Rovers is set to kick off at 7 p.m. Do you have any team news for us?
Yeah, well, Jack Byrne and Graham Burke are both on the bench. Stephen Bradley did declare them fit, but hasn't risked them from the start. Gaffney and Green are up top. Ronan Finn, a right wing back, and the Lions on the left. The three midfield will be Gary O'Neill and Chris McCann and Dylan Watts, and then the usual back three of Lee Grace, Pico Lopez, Sean Hoare and Alan Manis in goal. But it's a massive opportunity for Rovers to get into the next round, win this, and they should be guaranteed at least over $1 million, and then the chance to play in the playoff rounds for either the Europa League or the Europa Conference League, depending if they can get through the probable task of Ludogorets in the next round. They surely shouldn't blow it from here, but stranger things have happened.
You were at the press conference yesterday and spoke to Stephen Bradley. Should he have any concerns heading into this game? 3-0 up from the first leg, and you would think anyway, all in hand.
Yeah, they should. They should be okay, but second half last week, they'd be disappointed. He spoke about transitions in the press conference, about the Hibernians' transitions that kind of went from back to front quite quickly. They brought on Grutherson, a big centre forward. He's about 6 foot four and about 6 foot across as well. Caused Lee Grace and Roberto Lopez a lot of problems. He'll be one to watch. He hit the crossbar last week. They also hit the post last week as well in another counter-attack. So they will have to be wary. They might sit in and maybe try and play in the counter-attack. It's going to be very hot over there. So it should be a routine win, but...
Who knows?
Who knows?
We'll find out very soon. And that game is on RTE News Now if anybody wants to check it out. That is all we have time for this evening. Ruby, we'll see you soon.
See you soon, Marie. I do believe Tara Kumar's up next. When are you on again?
I'm not on till next week because I'm back on Euros duty and I'm on the Camogie. So busy.
Enjoy that.